You know what I'm going to do in this edition of the Rancho Radio Podcast? I'm going to talk about the how we got here. You are going to be blown away when you read the story from a life carrier's son as to the steps that it took and the adventure that finally culminated in the appearance of man himself. And it was all by design. And you're going to love this story. I guarantee you will love this story. I'm going to start telling more stories from the Rancho book, because the Rancho book is chock full of stories that explain how we got here. And it's unbelievable. So hang on. We're going to go back in time a million years ago, what life was like for mammals on planet Earth over a million years ago. You'll love it. Be right back. It's a great read. It really is a great read. If you look into the middle section of the Rancho book and you find the papers on just before what happened or what was going on planet Earth, you know, for 70, 80 million years, they're trying to get the life carriers are trying to develop and move evolution along in a different direction and get it so it can produce intelligent human beings with soul potential. And in paper 62, we learn about the preceding ancestral origins of the human race. Now, mind you, this is not what they teach in school. This isn't what today's scientists think there's a missing link. And today's science believes that evolution is causational without purpose. It's the Darwin concept of survival of the fittest. That's what led to the appearance of man. But the Rancho book has a different spin on it. And it goes into a lot of details about the work and the effort and the time that it took. So let's review from paper 62 the story of the appearance of the ancestors of man and then the appearance of man himself. So early in the career of dawn mammals, in the treetop abodes of a superior pair of these agile creatures, twins were born, one male and one female. Compared with their ancestors, they really were handsome little creatures. They had little hair on their bodies, but this was no disability as they lived in a warm and equable climate. These children grew to be a little more than 4 feet in height. They were in every way larger than their parents, having longer legs and shorter arms. They had almost perfect opposable thumbs, just about as well adapted for diversified work as the present human thumb. They walked upright, having feet almost as well suited for walking as those of the later human races. From paper 62, paragraph 3, their brains were inferior to and smaller than those of human beings, but very superior to and comparatively much larger than those of their ancestors. The twins early displayed superior intelligence and were soon recognized as the heads of the whole tribe of dawn mammals, really instituting a primitive form of social organization and a crude economic division of labor. This brother and sister mated and soon enjoyed the society of 21 children, much like themselves, all more than 4 feet tall and in every way superior to the ancestral species. This new group formed the nucleus of the mid-mammals. When the numbers of this new and superior group grew great, war, relentless war, broke out. And when the terrible struggle was over, not a single individual of the pre-existent and ancestral race of dawn mammals remained alive. The less numerous but more powerful and intelligent offshoot of the species had survived at the expense of their ancestors. And now, for almost 15,000 years, 600 generations, this creature, the mid-mammal, became the terror of this part of the world. All of the great and vicious animals of former times had perished. The large beasts native to these regions were not carnivorous, and the larger species of the cat family, lions and tigers, had not yet invaded this peculiarly sheltered nook of the Earth's surface. Therefore did these mid-mammals wax valiant and subdue the whole of their corner of creation. Compared with the ancestral species, the mid-mammals were an improvement in every way. Even their potential lifespan was longer, being about 25 years. A number of rudimentary human traits appeared in this new species. In addition to the innate propensities exhibited by their ancestors, these mid-mammals were capable of showing disgust in certain repulsive situations. They further possessed a well-defined hoarding instinct. They would hide food for subsequent use and were greatly given to the collection of stones suitable for defensive and offensive ammunition. As time passed, the natural increase in numbers eventually resulted in serious food competition and sex rivalry, all of which culminated in a series of internecine battles that nearly destroyed the entire species. These struggles continued until only one group of less than 100 individuals was left alive. But peace once more prevailed, and this lone surviving tribe built anew its treetop bedrooms and once again resumed a normal and semi-peaceful existence. Soon after the completion of their home, this couple, veterans of so many struggles, found themselves the proud parents of twins, the most interesting and important animals ever to have been born into the world up to that time. For they were the first of the new species of primates, constituting the next vital step in pre-human evolution. Now, we're talking about a time period of about 1.3 million years to about 1 million years. You had the dawn mammals, the direct offspring of the lemur-like mammals. Dawn mammals led to the appearance of the mid-mammals, and a particular parent of the mid-mammals sort of took over and became the tribal leaders in this area of the Mesopotamian Peninsula, which, as they say, was jetted out to the Indian Sea. And they took over this corner of creation, and they started to grow, and then there was a huge battle among members of this mid-mammal family until there was only 100 left. And out of this 100 that survived, that were intelligent enough to survive, they spawned a new species, one couple, the primates. And that's where the story picks up. Soon after the completion of their home, this couple, veterans of so many struggles, found themselves the proud parents of twins, the most interesting and important animals ever to have been born into the world up to that time. It makes a footnote here that modern man and simians did spring from the same tribe and species, but not from the same parents. Man's ancestors are descendant from the superior strains of the selected remnant of this mid-mammal tribe, whereas the modern simian, excepting certain pre-existent types of lemurs, gibbons, apes, and other monkey-like creatures, are the descendants of the most inferior couple of this mid-mammal group. One couple within this mid-mammal group had twins, and they were retarded, and they spawned the beginnings of the simian tribes, while another couple, a more superior couple, gave birth to the primates, a more progressive species. So now we talk about the primates. Going back to the birth of the superior twins, one male and one female, to the two leading members of the mid-mammal tribes, these animals were of an unusual order. They had still less hair on their bodies than their parents, and when very young, insisted on walking upright. Their ancestors had always learned to walk on their hind legs, but these primate twins stood erect from the beginning. They attained a height of over 5 feet, and their heads grew larger in comparison with others among the tribes. While early learning to communicate with each other by means of signs and sounds, they were never able to make their people understand these new symbols. The primates were more human and less animal than their mid-mammal predecessors. The skeletal proportions of this new species were very similar to those of the primitive human races. The human type of hand and foot had fully developed, and these creatures could walk and even run as well as any of their later-day human descendants. They largely abandoned tree life, though continuing to resort to the treetops as a safety measure at night. For like their earlier ancestors, they were greatly subjected to fear. The increased use of their hands did much to develop inherent brain power, but yet they did not possess minds that could really be called humans. And now, as we read in paper 62, section 4, paragraph 6, and now after almost 900 generations of development, covering about 21,000 years from the origin of the dawn mammals, the primates suddenly gave birth to two remarkable creatures. The first true human beings. Thus it was that the Don mammals, springing from the North American lemur type, gave origin to the mid mammals, and these mid mammals in turn produced the superior primates, who became the immediate ancestors of the primitive human race. The primates tribe were the last vital link in the evolution of man, but in less than 5,000 years, not a single individual of these extraordinary tribes was left. And so now the first human beings, we're being told about the very first human beings. Listen to the way the life carriers describe. From the year AD 1934 back to the birth, by the way, 1934, the year this book was written, back to the first two human beings is just 993,419 years. I wonder how that would fly in science, anthropology. So the human race has been in existence, dating back from 1934, just under 993,500 years. These first two human beings and their descendants reached full maturity at 12 years of age and possessed a potential lifespan of about 75 years. Many new emotions early appeared in these human twins. They experienced admiration for both objects and other beings and exhibited considerable vanity. But the most remarkable advance in emotional development was the sudden appearance of a new group of really human feelings, the worshipful group, embracing awe, reverence, humility, and even a primitive form of gratitude. Fear, joined with ignorance of natural phenomena, is about to give birth to primitive religion. Not only were such human feelings manifested in these primitive humans, but many more highly evolved sentiments were also present in rudimentary form. They were mildly cognizant of pity, shame, and reproach, and were acutely conscious of love, hate, and revenge, being also susceptible to marked feelings of jealousy. From paper 62, section 5, paragraph 7, very early they learned to engage in verbal communication. By the age of 10, they had worked out an improved sign and word language of almost 100 ideas and had greatly improved and expanded the crude communicative techniques of their ancestors. But try as hard as they might, they were not able to teach but just a few words and new signs and symbols to their parents. When about 9 years of age, they journeyed off down the river one bright day and held a momentous conference. Every celestial intelligence stationed on your rancho, including myself, the author writes, was present as an observer of the transactions of this noontide tryst. On this eventful day, they arrived at an understanding to live with and for each other. And this was the first of a series of such agreements which finally culminated in the decision to flee from their inferior animal associates and to journey northward, little knowing that they were thus to found the human race. While we were all greatly concerned about what these two little savages were planning, we were powerless to control the workings of their minds. We did not, could not, arbitrarily influence their decisions. But within the permissible limits of planetary function, we, the life carriers, together with our associates, all conspired to lead the human twins northward and far from their hairy and partially tree-dwelling people. And so, by reason of their own intelligent choice, the twins did migrate, and because of our supervision, they migrated northward to a secluded region where they escaped the possibility of biologic degradation through admixture with their inferior relatives of the primate tribes. Shortly before their departure from the home forest, they lost their mother in a gibbon raid. While she did not possess their intelligence, she did have a worthy mammalian affection of a high order for her offspring, and she fearlessly gave her life in the attempt to save the wonderful pair. Nor was her sacrifice in vain, for she held off the enemy until the father arrived with reinforcements and put the invaders to rout. Soon after this young couple forsook their associates to found the human race, their primate father became disconsolate. He was heartbroken. He refused to eat, even when food was brought to him by his other children. Life did not seem worth living among his ordinary fellows, so he wandered off into the forest, was set upon by hostile gibbons and beaten to death. So the parents of the first two humans met with an untimely death because they had enough feelings and they were despondent. That's an interesting story, isn't it? And we'll conclude with this, because what does this all mean? What's the end game here? What were the end games of all the planning, millions and millions, tens of millions of years of planning this eventful day when humans would appear with the ability to worship? This is what the author says. We, the life carriers on Urantia, had passed through the long vigil of watchful waiting since the day we first planted the life plasm in the planetary waters, and naturally the appearance of the first really intelligent and volitional beings brought to us great joy and supreme satisfaction. We had been watching the twins develop mentally through our observation of the functioning of the seven adjutant mind spirits assigned to Urantia at the time of our arrival on the planet. Imagine our joy one day when the twins, about 10 years old, when the spirit of worship made its first contact with the mind of the female twin and shortly thereafter with the male. We knew that something closely akin to human mind was approaching culmination. And when, about a year later, they finally resolved, as a result of meditative thought and purposeful decision, to flee from home and journey north, then did the spirit of wisdom begin to function on Urantia and in these two now recognized human minds. So it wasn't their skeleton, it wasn't their ability to use flint, it was the development of their mind to work with the spirit influences. It was the ability and the evolution of mind that determined the first appearance of humanity. And what are these spirit influences? Well, they start out with spirit of intuition. Most animals have a spirit of intuition, which gives them that instinct to self-preservation, understanding, cooperation. You ever see the birds when they fly in that pattern? Sometimes they follow the leader. Or you see a bunch of birds where they follow each other. That means that their minds are capable on some level of cooperation. Then comes knowledge, learning to look before you leap. And then there's counsel. And then finally, the ability to worship. And consequently, because of the ability to worship, is the reception of wisdom. And they say that for these two animals, the wisdom part was in their decision, one, to move northward and get out of the jungle, and two, to dedicate their lives to one another. That was true wisdom in operation. And it was that demarcation that substantiated the appearance of the first human mind. And that's what they're saying here, because the mind is the portal to soul potential. You know, the Urantia book is just full of so many wonderful stories, and I really feel compelled to share them with you. Even if you're a seasoned reader and you've been studying the papers forever, it's nice to look back and remember some of the great stories that teach us so much. Listen, if you've got a particular story you'd like us to talk about, or some section of the Urantia book, you can do so. Just email me, urantiabookradio@gmail.com. And I want to thank you. I'm always grateful. Please share these podcasts. Tell a friend, hey, you want to listen to an interesting podcast about history and metaphysics and spirituality? Check out the Urantia Radio podcast. Until next time, thanks for stopping by, and God bless.